Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Did you know that Delmonico's restaurant was the first restaurant to use tablecloths and that it was the birthplace of Eggs Benedict? Did you know that down on Pearl Street in 1725, America's first newspaper was printed, and 6 years later, the first map of New York was printed? Did you know that when Goldman Sachs began to construct their new building in 1979, they uncovered the remnants of an English tavern called Lovelace, founded in 1668 and among the oldest architectural remains in New York City? And this is all just from page 24 of the new book, I Never Knew That About New York City. It's the latest in the popular I Never Knew That series by Christopher Wynn. Every page is full of interesting facts and history about Manhattan in this case. So, Christopher Wynn, this book is so cool. Thanks for writing it and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on this very special show.
And listeners, we're not just going to rattle off cool New York City facts at you. This is your chance to participate. Here's how it works. If you think you know New York City really well, call in and we'll quiz you live on the air. One question. It's a New York City history and culture quiz, you might call it. And here's the wrinkle. If you answer a question correctly, you will have a chance, if you want, to quiz me and Christopher right back. So if you have a favorite piece of New York City trivia of your own and you think you can stump the author of I Never Knew That About New York, call in and play our quiz, then ask a question of your own if you get one right. 212-433-WNYC if you want to try. 212-433-9692. And Christopher, before we go to the phones, I think we just need to establish, since this is radio and all people know about you is your voice, why does someone who sounds like you and lives in London writing a book about New York City trivia?
Because I love New York City. It's the most exciting city in the world. And I've been writing these trivia books about British cities or British countries and London. And when I got the chance to go abroad, the first city I thought that I must do is New York. And it's proved its worth. It's been the most exciting thing I've ever done.
And we'll say that the book is structured geographically, beginning with Lower Manhattan, Ellis and Liberty Islands, and then moving all the way up to Inwood. And you just have to promise, since it's just a Manhattan book, to come back and write four more about Staten Island, Queens, Bronx, and Brooklyn.
I certainly will. That's what I set out to do. But, of course, I realized I'd written half a book just before I'd hardly left Bowling Green. So I realized I should stick to Manhattan for now, and then I will come back and do all the other boroughs, too.
All right. Let's give some of our listeners calling in a chance to answer some of your trivia questions. Nick in Greenpoint, you ready?
Hi, Brian. I'm ready.
Okay. So let's see. Do you have it, Chris, or do I have them all?
You have them all.
Okay.
I can ask them if you want. Up to you.
All right. I will start here. This circle is the point from which all official distances to and from New York City are measured.
This circle. Let's see. Is it Columbus Circle?
It is,
that
Christopher.
Is
you have the answers, but I believe that it is Columbus Circle, right?
It is correct. That's the right answer.
All right. Columbus Circle.
I have a question for you, gentlemen.
Okay, you have earned the right. Go ahead. Try to stump us.
So the New York newspaper strike of 1962-1963 that wiped out many of the daily papers in this city, but also, you know, produced the New York Review of Books, among other things. There were seven daily English language papers in New York City, two more in Long Island that went on strike. How many can you name?
Oh, gosh. Oh,
crikey.
That is in 1962 and 63. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
You can get a few of them.
Did we have the Herald Tribune then?
Yes, we did. That's one.
Did we have the Daily Mirror?
That's another.
So obviously the Post and the Daily News and the Times.
You're up to five. Two more.
But this is where I'm going to stop. This is where I'm going to get stumped. Chris, do you have any?
I don't. You've got all the ones I was going to get. But so we don't still have the New York Gazette, do we?
No, that was already gone.
It's a great question. What are they?
The New York Journal American, which was Hearst's, I believe.
Journal American.
And the New York World Telegram and Sun,
right,
which is my personal favorite, an afternoon one that broke a lot of the stories against Robert Moses.
Great question, Nick. Thank you very much. Okay, Nick can be your new assistant editor when you do the second edition, right?
I should be calling him straight away.
Hector in Union City, you ready for a question?
I am. I'm a little nervous. This guy got it right. Now I'm ready to go.
All right. So the question is, who was Giovanni de Verrazzano? Of course, he has a bridge named after him now in the news today on what the toll should be. But who was Giovanni de Verrazzano?
Obviously an Italian immigrant who I would say was an engineer. Oh, wait. No. No. Not at all. Giovanni de Verrazzano was one of the explorers who Giovanni de Verrazzano was one of those big explorers like Hernando Cortez, and that's as far as I can go with him.
Everybody out there, can you Google as fast as Hector? But is that the right answer, Chris?
That is the right answer. He was the first European to see what we now call New York Harbor or the Upper Bay.
Okay.
He anchored his ship La Dauphine in the Narrows and took a little rowing boat into the bay to see what it was like, and then got chased out by a storm. But he was the first European to see New York Harbor.
Awesome. We'll give it to you, Hector.
I didn't Google, Brian. Please.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. And right, you have a question for us, I see, right?
I do. The term 23 Skidoo was born in New York City. Can you identify what it means and which iconic New York building it references?
I cannot, though I guess
it's on
23rd
Street.
You can, Chris.
I
go ahead.
I can do that one, yep. That was the Flatiron Building because it caused drafts of wind to go down 23rd Street and blow up the ladies' skirts.
And people used
to hang around to watch the skirts, and they got told to skidoo by the police.
There
23
you go.
Skidoo.
Brilliant. That's exactly correct.
Hector, thanks
Great
a lot.
Question.
Keep calling us. All right, Norman in Westport, you ready for a question? And the question is, in what city was the Statue of Liberty constructed?
I know it was in France. It's too obvious to say Paris, so I'll say Louvre.
It was too obvious, so you didn't give us the right answer. Right, Chris?
It was Paris.
Was Paris. Norman, thanks for trying. Eric in Harlem, you ready for one?
Get him.
The first immigrant registered through Ellis Island was a young girl celebrating her 15th birthday on that very day, January 1st, 1892. What country was she from?
I'm going to say Italy.
Was she, Chris?
No, she was from Ireland, from County Cork. She was a girl called Annie Moore, and there's a statue of her on Ellis Island.
Nice try. Alexander in Brooklyn, you ready for a question?
Yes, I sure am. Hi.
So while we're still down there in the harbor, what are the seven spikes on the Statue of Liberty's crown meant to represent? If you can give us any three, we'll say you got it right. Hint, it's nothing about New York City. Think much bigger. The seven spikes.
I would say...
So it's actually...
Fraternity and egalite, fraternity, equality, and brotherhood.
And actually, when I said you could name any three, that was a little misleading. Take that back, because it's really more high concept than that.
Okay.
It's not this, this, and this. So I'm going to give you that clue, even though you were just giving us a wrong answer. What might it be, the seven spikes?
Wait, I don't understand how you just changed the question a little bit. You have to...
No. The question is the same question. The seven spikes on the Statue of Liberty's crown represent something. Seven somethings.
Okay, they represent seven ideals.
Nice try. But it was the seven seas, right, Chris?
That's right, the seven seas. I'm not sure I could name all the seven seas.
No, and that's what I was thinking at first, but of course that was stupid. So I clarified to say the concept behind it. All right, let's try Joan in Manhattan. Joan, you ready for a question?
Certainly.
And boy, Chris, you've got some toughies here. We're stumping a lot of people. So how about this? Let's see. Oh, gosh. In the middle of the night in 1989, this 7,000-pound bronze sculpture appeared in Lower Manhattan. Police tried to remove it, but the public demanded that it be kept, and now it's on permanent loan to the city. What famous statue are we talking about?
It's the big bronze bull.
Absolutely right.
Yay. And so you've got a question for us now that you knew about the big bronze bull, the 7,000-pound sculpture that appeared in Lower Manhattan.
I think that it was actually put in front of the Stock Exchange.
I think
it was.
One or
was
two people may have seen it there, yes.
It Great. Was put, and then the police
then
made
moved.
Them move it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a pretty easy question, but it's one of my favorites to ask people from out of town. What are the names of the lions in front of the library?
The names of
on
the
Fifth
lions
Avenue.
In front of the library on Fifth Avenue. Now, I should know that.
And I thought this would be an easy one.
No.
And I know there's something like fidelity and honor, and I've known this in the best.
I'm stumping you. I'm loving this.
gosh. And we've said it on the show, and I can't remember the actual, but it's you know, truth and beauty or
no.
fidelity and honor or
no.
something along those lines. What is it, Joan?
Patience and fortitude.
Patience and fortitude.
That's right.
Of course.
It was Mayor LaGuardia who named them, wasn't it, with the fortitude the New Yorkers showed through the 30s Depression. Is that right?
Yes, Joan, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Joan, great job. You got the
question
right,
question.
And you stumped us, Joan in Manhattan. Thanks a lot. By the way, going back to that bull story, this is one of the great stories from the book. How did you discover it? Was it sort of hidden history behind such an iconic symbol of New York?
That was a story I sort of already knew because I remember the news when it actually happened and the extraordinary sort of fuss there was at the police when they tried to get rid of it and everybody working out how on earth had he got this huge great bronze statue in front of the Stock Exchange anyway. So it was a big story at the time and it was wonderful to come and discover it where it is now, which is just sort of north of Bowling Green. And it's one of the iconic sites of New York, one of the things you come to see.
My guest is Christopher Wynn, author of the book I Never Knew That About New York City, with all kinds of New York City trivia. And so we're inviting your calls to get a New York City trivia quiz question, and then if you get it right, to ask us a question of your own, if you have one, and try to stump us at 212-433-WNYC. Tom in base. Oh, we have such a terrible line. Tom, I apologize. John in East Harlem. Hi, John.
Hello.
So, in 1960, the San Juan Hill neighborhood was torn down to make way for the construction of Lincoln Center. This slum was the location for what famous musical about New York City immigrants?
West Side Story.
That was
That's
an easy
correct.
One. Yay. From page 200,
Very good. Very
from page
good.
208 of the book. And I see you have a question for us.
Yes. There's a park in Staten Island called Bloomingdale Park, but there was once a park in Manhattan in the Kips Bay neighborhood called Bloomingdale Park as well. What famous sports event, well, not famous sports event, but what significant sports event did it host?
A significant sports event in Bloomingdale Park on Staten Island. That's the question.
No,
right?
No. It's a former park in the Kips Bay area of Manhattan.
All right.
You got me.
It wasn't a baseball match, was it?
You're close-ish.
Close-ish.
All right. What's the answer?
The first ever international cricket match between Canada and the United States.
Played in New York of all places. What year?
I should have known that.
1840s. I would have to do a little Googling on that, but 1840s.
Around the same.
Preceded the first Ashes by a significant amount of time.
Around the same time as the beginning of baseball. You have stumped a Brit about cricket, John.
Well, that was my aim. Thank you.
I hang my head in shame.
Thank you very much. All right, let's keep going. We'll go to Vince in New Jersey. Vince, you there?
I am.
And so here's a question for you. Here are four names. Three of them have a statue in Union Square. One does not. Which one does not? George Washington, Mahatma Gandhi, Abraham Lincoln, or Louis Armstrong?
I would have to say Abraham Lincoln.
Which would be wrong. It's actually Louis Armstrong, isn't it?
That's correct. Yes,
who
Abraham Lincoln is in Union Square.
Not have a statue in Union Square, but he should. Let's start a movement. Richard in Manhattan, you ready for a question?
Yes.
In the 20s and 30s, 1920s and 1930s, there were up to 48 bookshops located on 4th Avenue between Union Square and Astor Place. Now there's only one, but it might be the most famous bookshop in the world.
The Strand.
Absolutely right.
I have a question for you.
Go.
Why was the original design of the Statue of Liberty by Bartoli rejected by the U.S. government?
Chris, do you know?
The original? No, I'm afraid
they,
I don't know.
They demanded an amendment because originally Lady Liberty was holding in her hand broken chains to represent the abolition of slavery in this country. And we said, no, no, we don't want to be reminded of our dark, dark past. So now the chains are at her feet, and they're barely visible.
They're hidden beneath her toga, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. I've heard that before. Richard, thank you very much.
That's very good. That's very good.
All right. We will take a break and then continue with Christopher Wynn, author of I Never Knew That About New York City. And so if you want to hear things that he's compiled and try to stump us with a question of your own, 212-433-WNYC. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue with our New York City trivia quiz with many of you who are waiting on the phone with the assistance of Christopher Wynn, whose latest book is I Never Knew That About New York City. So if you want to take a trivia question, one question quiz, and then if you have a question that you want to try to stump us with, as several people successfully have already, you can call in with that at 212-433-WNYC. When our lines open up, the lines are already full. Hey, Chris.
Hi.
We've gotten an instant fact check since the first half of this. Remember that trivia question about the seven spikes on the Statue of Liberty representing the seven seas? Well, someone just tweeted us an article that quotes the Statue of Liberty Park official librarian saying that it's not actually true. Now, the official National Park Service website still includes the Seven Seas story, but the librarian is quoted as saying that they need to go change the website. So this brings up the question, how hard was it in researching the book to separate fact from folklore in doing your research?
It was hard. It's never easy. I mean, there are some facts that are very easy and stare you in the face. There are some facts that are slightly hearsay that come down through time and maybe slightly altered through time. But I have a sort of rule of thumb. If I can check them on four or five different sources, then I reckon they're as likely as anything to be true. But this is one of the problems with doing a book like this, is that there are so many different facts, and a lot of these stories have slightly different endings sometimes. But I find that if you actually go to the place, that's the best place to actually learn the real facts. And the guides who take you around these places are fantastic. Though, obviously, that surprises me that the Statue of Liberty guides and the website have maybe got that wrong. Because, you know, they're usually so good and so spot on with these things. And the museums are terrific places to go. I like the Museum of the City of New York and Fifth Avenue and the New York Historical Society, which is the oldest museum in New York. And they are terrific.
Excellent sources, and also
talking to people in the street, because New Yorkers are not backwards and coming forwards, and they were so helpful, and they seem to know, as we're finding out from your listeners today, they really know their facts. So you know, you can do lots and lots of checks, but occasionally something like this happens.
Were there any significant New York City pieces of lore that you ended up debunking?
I don't think so. I don't think it's my particular place to debunk New York City lore. Again, three or four or five different people tell me the same story, then I reckon that's a pretty good New York story.
All right, let's go back to our callers and give them some more trivia questions from your book. Eddie in Queens. Hi, Eddie. You're on the air.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Here you go. As you know, the ceiling of the main concourse at Grand Central Terminal features a painting of the Zodiac, but something is off. What is different about this mural?
Oh, goodness. Is it missing a Zodiac sign?
Chris, that is not it, right?
No, that's not the answer. It was painted in mirror fashion because the artist, who was a chap called Paul Hellou, used a medieval map which depicts the heavens as they would be seen from the outside. So it's in mirror fashion, which can be quite confusing, but it's still very beautiful.
It's the backwards Zodiac. By the way, we don't have chaps here, Chris. We have...
Do you not?
No, we have dudes.
Dudes.
All right, Ben on the Lower
East. I was a chap.
You ready for a question, Ben?
Yeah.
Here we go. The Chrysler Building was the tallest building for exactly 11 months. In 1930, when it was overtaken by the Empire State Building. But the Chrysler is still the tallest building of its kind, and it's something you might not know by just looking at it. So, according to Christopher Wynn's book, the Chrysler Building is still the tallest what building in the world?
Non-spired?
Chris?
No, it's the tallest brick building in the world.
Oh.
Tallest building made of brick, and you can't see it because it's encased in steel, but it is the tallest brick building in the world.
People don't think of that as a brick building as they walk by. Fascinating. Mary, you ready for a question?
Yep, I sure am. And chaps is something that we wear when we go riding here, but just nor here nor there.
I will remember that.
So this place has been filmed more than any other location in the world. The first movie it appeared in was the 1908 version of Romeo and Juliet. What's the Manhattan location?
Oh. Central Park?
Chris?
Absolutely correct. That was it. It appears in more films than anywhere else.
Central Park, indeed. So now you get to ask us a question and try to stump us.
Okay, I really don't think I'm going to stump you, but since it's my neighborhood, I will ask. Where is Sniffin Court, and what is it?
Sniffin Court. Does it smell good or does it smell bad?
Actually, in the spring, it smells delicious.
What is Sniffin Court, Mary?
Sniffin Court, well, it's on East 36th Street between Lexington and Park, and it is the oldest. Were one of the oldest, I think, if not the oldest, historical district in New York City.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
That is fascinating.
And you did stump us. Paul on the Upper West Side, you ready for a question?
Yes.
This church cemetery is the only remaining active cemetery in Manhattan. Ralph Ellison, Ed Koch, and many, many generations of Astors are buried there. Do you know the name of this ultra-famous church cemetery, the only remaining active cemetery in Manhattan?
Holy Trinity?
Chris?
Well, it's the Trinity Church Cemetery,
yes.
I think.
That's right. It's the Trinity Church Cemetery. So you have a question for us, right,
yes,
Paul?
Yes, I do. What catastrophic weather event took place that forced all telegraph electric cables underground? What was the year and what was the event called?
Was it the Great Blizzard of 1888?
Bingo.
All right.
Yes.
March 12th through the 14th. I have another one. Who owns the tracks under Riverside Park?
I didn't say you get two. I'll say Amtrak.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, they'll both get one right.
All right. John in Manhattan, you ready for a question?
Yeah, I'm ready.
On May 30th, 1896, around the corner of 130th Street and Broadway, then known as Western Boulevard, the first recorded incident of its kind in the United States took place. What was the incident on May 30th, 1896?
Was it a car accident, car crash?
Chris?
Absolutely correct, it was. Henry Wells of Springfield, Massachusetts, knocked cyclist Evelyn Thomas off her bicycle. The first recorded automobile accident in America.
In fact, bicycle advocates these days like to point out that it involved a car hitting a bicyclist.
Nothing changes.
So, good, John, you got one for us? Mm.
Yes, when Olmsted designed Central Park, he made the roads curving, in curves. Why? Winding, I should say.
Say it again. Sorry.
When Olmsted designed Central Park, he made the roads winding. Why did he?
So that they to differentiate it from the grid pattern of Manhattan.
No, the reason was that to avoid horse and carriage races. It was very common in those days for people to race their horse and carriages against each other. So to slow them down, he made the curvy.
And, you know, the Mayor de Blasio of the 19th century was instituting a Vision Zero to curb horse speeding.
Right, exactly. It's very apropos after our car accident question.
John, thank you very much. Another instant fact check, by the way. We asked the question about all the bookshops that used to be just south of Union Square, up to 48 in just two blocks. We said that the Strand was the only one left. But a few eager listeners just tweeted at us that there is a small store called Alabaster Bookshop on 4th Avenue. So a shout-out to the huge Strand and the tiny Alabaster for holding it down in the former bookshop district. All right. Tony in North Salem, you ready for a question?
Yes, I am.
I'm just going to another page here. On Varick Street, just a little north of the WNYC studios, in fact, is the 8 Hook and Ladder Firehouse. It's back in the news this week. Why?
Oh, I have no idea. Was one of the fire trucks damaged in the World Trade Center disaster being put into the museum down there?
Actually, luckily it's a little more lighthearted than that. It was used in the movie Ghostbusters, and it was actually the passing of Harold Ramis that brought it back into the news this week. All right, George in Hackensack?
Hello, I'm here.
Here we go. In the 1930s, 10th Avenue was known as Death Avenue because of all the accidents that took place due to freight tracks that ran down the street. The solution was to build a new railway. What was notable about this railway?
It was elevated.
That's correct.
It was correct. And it is now very famous and known as something else.
Yes, it's called the High Line, and it's a big, big tourist attraction.
Absolutely. All right, so for the last 30 seconds of the show, you get to ask us your question.
Okay, downtown in the Village, I'll even locate it for you, very close to the Hudson River, the shortest street in Manhattan. Name it.
The shortest street in Manhattan.
In the Village.
Think of the husband of a guest host you had, a female. Edgar Street. John Rivers' husband, Edgar.
All right.
Edgar Street. That's great.
Have a good day, you guys.
There you go. Thank you very much. I don't know. There's a 217th Street in Upper Manhattan that's one block. So maybe Edgar Street is one shorter block. And we leave. Oh, we just looked it up. It's 55 feet long. How about that? Wow. So there's a piece of New York City trivia that Christopher Wynn now knows, in addition to everything he wrote in the book, I Never Knew That About New York City. Chris, this has been so much fun. Thank you for doing it with us.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
And listeners, thanks for being with us. Thanks for all your pledges during the drive. Stay tuned for the Leonard Lopate Show coming up next on WNYC. Brian Lehrer, talk to you tomorrow.